Views and opinions expressed during the Drive Time with Dave Glover are those of Dave and his guests, and not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment for Dave? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now, here's Dave.
And welcome back to the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Oliver. Good morning, Starshine. Joining me right now, Rob Washburn. Rob Washburn from this. He's a e-journalism professor at Loyalist College. You know him as well. It's Wednesday. It's time for Rob Washburn. And that was Oliver, as I said. Thanks. Welcome back to the show, Rob.
Thanks for having me back, Dave. And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too, and our listeners out there. We got... Deb still hasn't come by to pick up her bell, so we are still giving away wings here at the studio. Hectic schedule, I guess you had during the old lead up to Christmas and the holidays. You've been busy. What do they say? Busier than a one iron paper hanger.
That's about it, eh? Getting ready for Christmas and the New Year celebrations and getting ready to go back to school next Monday. So, how about yourself? Did you have a good holiday?
Had a good holiday. I've had my son staying with me for the last few weeks. Been actually pretty good spending some time with him and. You know, it's Christmas, so you want to be near family. My in-laws, my brother-in-law and his family, and my sister-in-law and her family, they all went on down to Florida after Christmas. So we had a quick Christmas with them, sort of Christmas Eve, and then whoosh, off they went to Florida. I think they drove, or at least one of them drove, the other flew down. I think they met up down there, though.
Well, that's pretty nice. Go down somewhere nice and warm and get a little toasty before you come back and have to face Mother Nature.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes Mother Nature slaps you in the face, too. That's the saddest reality there. Anyway, joining us today, as I say, Rob Washburn, and we're going to be talking about the year that was. Now, according to the paper, the local paper here in Northumberland today. Actually, this is the Northumberland News, isn't it?
It is.
And the Remembering 2014 in Northumberland, two newsmaker stories in Port Hope and Cobourg. They touched our hearts and spurred protests. The story of 2014 won't soon be forgotten. The two stories they've chosen, and they've only just chosen the two here, was, of course, the suicide death of Chaz Petrella in Cobourg, the outrage, the public outrage, the Chazapalooza event that was held in his honor, and the fact that people are looking for an inquest, frankly, into this situation. How did it come to that? And the big issue in Port Hope was the conflicts between Ward 1 and 2, quite frankly, and what's going on with that. And hopefully with the new mayor, and we've got their big celebration coming tomorrow, and the new council, mostly new, I understand, except for I think one incumbent reelected. Jeff Lees was the only one reelected. So again, is that going to help in solving the problem? But are those the two big stories for Northumberland for the 2014? Rob, would you agree with that?
Definitely. I think they're both significant stories. I wouldn't say they're the only ones, but I think they're important ones. Chaz's story obviously highlighted the deficiency in mental health services in Northumberland, which emphasized, I think, a continuing problem for rural Ontario, which is having sufficient services in rural areas. Mm-hmm. And I think it drove home the fact that we really need to give that some attention. Obviously, the hospital and the Lynn are making moves to try and improve mental health services, but will it be enough? And will we get the inquest? What do you think? Do you think we'll get the inquest?
I'd like to say yes. I think we will. I think the outcry is still there. It's still lingering. People have not forgotten. There's still people, as Pete Fisher said, you know, he's gonna do his best to ensure that whatever is necessary, that there is definitely an inquest. But I got to say, you know, that was the highlighted issue for 2014 for Cobourg. But mental health and mental distress has really been an issue for all of 2014 for the entire country. We've been dealing with, we can look at the Michael Zahoff Bebo shooting that occurred in Ottawa. This was a man who was in mental distress. I mean, the government's tried to paint it as a terrorist attack. But even Sergeant Petrella's wife has said, look, Sergeant Nathan Cirilla's wife, yes, who was, you know, devastated by his murder, has said, look, we need to be looking at mental health issues. This isn't an issue of terrorism. So again, and this is something that's been going on all year long with the lack of funding at the federal level for healthcare for survivors, if you will, of the Gulf conflict, the Afghan war as well. So really, you know, it's almost incumbent upon them to have this inquest.
I think so, and I would be good to see what came out of it. In particular, I mean, it's such a different thing, and we've talked about this a number of times, you and I, living in an urban area and the level of service that you get in an urban center, mm-hmm. and, you know, having living in a rural area where the service levels are not the same. And, you know, I think it's becoming incumbent upon the provincial government now to start to look at how they're going to properly fund mm-hmm. these kinds of services. And they can't have residents running off to Peterborough or to Oshawa or to Belleville to get whatever service, or Whitby, in fact. I mean, that's one of the closest mental hospitals, but that kind of thing. Kingston's the other place where mm-hmm. there's proper facilities. So, you know, we can't have these sort of ragtag services, and I think an inquest would bring that to light and to see what really needs to be done here to support people who are suffering from mental illness.
No, absolutely. And again, as I say, you know, this was definitely a story that impacted a lot of people here in Coburg, particularly where young Chaz lived. You know, and there was the funeral service, which was attended by the public at large. There was also the big event, the Chazapalooza event that occurred. And, I mean, there was a donation made on behalf of a number of people who've been affected by similar circumstances yes. within their own lives. And even, you know, the fact that there was the donation there by Avril Lavigne for the guitar. I mean, because she believes in supporting youth mental crisis, mental health issues. And let's face it, we've got a number of stressors out there. You know, school's a lot tougher than it was perhaps for some of these kids. Maybe they're not getting what they need at school. They got to get it at home. Mom and dad aren't necessarily available there to be the shoulders to cry on or even to lean on because they're overwhelmed themselves. So there are a lot of stressors, and there are a lot of reasons why this can happen. Now, again, with the Chaz Petrella situation, I don't want to get into any kind of guessing as to what led to this. That's obviously something that has to come out at an inquest.
And I think that's the best way to get at it. I think, you know, it's not a place for the community to speculate or mm-hmm. or for bureaucrats to play checkers with these kinds of things. That we need to get some solid direction and then some solid solutions. So that I think that's really, really important. But the second thing, and I ask you about this, is this whole thing with the Ward 2 and Port Hope. I mean, we've got a new council in. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen? How do you think this is going to unfold?
Well, I'm you know, I'm like so many listeners out there. Obviously, I've taken the wait and see stance. I hope it's going to be different. I hope it's going to be better. But there are issues that need to be addressed. I mean, this money that's being held in trust, for instance, what's going to happen with that money? Is that going to be used in Ward 2? And how is that going to benefit the residents there? Especially from the conversations you and I had with concerned individuals, it seems to me like that money was there to offset increases in property taxes that were seen to be inevitable, you know, and that's what it should be used for. So that's one issue that could be resolved. But again, the whole Ward 1, Ward 2 thing, there are a number of things that, you know, quite frankly, Ward 2 is having to pay for, which they don't want to. Are those things going to be addressed? I mean, the real nickels and dimes stuff, that's really where the problem exists, isn't it?
Well, yes. And I think there's a couple of key things to this. First of all, there's a case before the courts.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't think anybody can go run and hide if they want to, even if they wanted to, because, you know, there are dates that have been set and it's got to move forward. The second thing is you've got a brand new council in there. Now, people may be familiar with the street talk that goes around these issues, but to get on the inside now to become fully up to speed and what is the direction that we're going to take, mm-hmm. that's going to be a real early test of this new council. So I think it's very critical, and it's not something new. I mean, it was back last January that the Port Hope Rural Redesign Group, which was that sort of that initial body, was talking about, you know, we want to secede from Port Hope, we want to have a referendum in the municipal election come fall, mm-hmm. and they were talking about looking for maybe another rural municipality they could realign with, and then they went courting down to Hamilton Township.
Yeah.
And Hamilton Township, no thank you. So,
well, they haven't actually said no thank you. What they've said is, and that was interesting because Linda Thompson was actually the person who had to make the inroads because The way it worked was Ward 2 couldn't themselves go to Hamilton Township. Hamilton Township had to say, sorry, we can't enter into those conversations with you. So that did happen. But they did say that if the mayor wants to ask us about it, that we will discuss it with her, which she did. And they had, subsequent to that conversation, at least as I remember it, said, yeah, we would probably be willing to do that. So, again, has the door been slammed shut? I think maybe as the front door closed, someone sort of cracked open the back door there and used a conversation with the former mayor. Now, again, I wasn't privy to that conversation, so I'm not a fly on the wall. But my understanding from the news reports that came out subsequent to that was that, yes, there was an offer there, and the Hamilton Township wasn't saying no, was not saying no.
Well, but again, I think this is, again, a watershed issue for the upcoming year, how this council handles mm-hmm. the funding, the court funding issue before the courts, and then what will happen after that in terms of taxation.
And just to that point as well, because Bob Sanders said here when we had him in the chair, he said the same thing on the TV Cogeco debates, that this was a conversation that should have been happened a long time ago. A settlement should have been reached over a cup of coffee. That was his stance on this. So is there now the chance that the entire court thing could go away if they were to sit down and have a cup of coffee? I mean, is it as simple as that? Obviously, some costs would have to be paid, but is that something that's even possible?
Yeah, let's hope somebody can find $2.10.
I think you'd probably need about $5, actually.
Okay.
For the two of them. If it was just two people to sit down. But, you know, in something like that, you'd have to have at least someone there as a recorder.
Yeah.
So now you're talking three copies.
Okay.
So now you're talking three copies, maybe a cruller. It's $10.
$10. Okay. For $10, we're
so
in.
Who knows? Bob, if you need the $10, I'd be more than happy to do a little fundraising for you and try and get that $10 for you. And
Donate here at the drive time.
I bet you Ed White would give that $10 to have the... Because he said the same thing. Like, how is this not just going to go away? Like, why is it we can't just have reasonable heads prevail? Why can't somebody just say, let's have a conversation, like Bob said, and put this to rest? So, again, if we do need the $10, and if you are listening, Mr. Mayor... I'm sure we'll have a listener who could quite easily kick in the $10. Says, I'm not doing it. I'm a volunteer here. You know?
I'd have a bake sale, but I don't think it would be very good.
Exactly. You know? Well, I'd end up raising too much money at that point. Who gets the rest? You know, do you invite more than the three people required?
Hamilton Township.
You got to invite the Hamilton Township people, exactly. So those were the two big issues from Northumberland News. But let's talk about some of the other issues, because I know that you were going through the paper and pulling out a bunch of other stories.
I think really NTECREM, a huge story over the year, a real arc and an incredible narrative that just developed over the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back in February, there were protests when Kathleen Wynne came. She was speaking at the Port Hope Chamber of Commerce, and there was, I think you'll remember, there was the big protests for NTECREM. And then, of course, things evolved along. There was the huge fight. Then, of course, we saw council backing out of the and not approving the planning.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're sitting with the OMB hearing coming up in the upcoming months, very early in the year. But now they've stepped away from the table, and they've stepped back in the sense of their environmental assessment, and they're going to complete some further studies. I guess they're going to wait to see how the OMB makes their decision.
And who is they? You mean
the company?
NTECREM.
Yeah, they're going to have to wait to see how mm-hmm. that goes and if that's worth it.
Again, it's almost, and I'm going to say this because they've really played the card this way. They come across as bullies. This is the problem with a company like NTECREM, who, for all intents and purposes, at least from the information I've been able to gather, really haven't got anything up and running, right, of significance. Not that would definitely be able to be used as a track record for what they're proposing in Port Hope. They've come into town. They've said, this is what we're doing. We're going to do it this way. This is the procedure we're following. Oh, if you're not happy with it, we'll just take it to the OMB. Well, and the town said, fine. Eventually, the town said, fine. We're going to back our citizens and say, fine, take us to the OMB then. At which point, they've seemed to have said, well, we're going to go there, but we are going to look at these other things first. So is it simply a fact that the town council has looked them in the eye and said, okay, let's do this? And the company has said, well, maybe we don't want to. Could it be a victory in that sense?
It's hard to tell because, first of all, Antec Rem keeps their cards close to their chest. They're not talking publicly. The Ministry of Environment, I can tell you from my own experience in trying to interview these people, is trying to like walk through a swamp neck deep. It's so bogged down in procedure, and this follows by this and this, and you know, raising status and tribunals, and you know, it just gets really bogged down. So it's really hard for the average person, I think, to really understand what's going on here. But as it stands right at the moment, in terms of the environmental assessment, as I understood it when I talked to people, right now the ministry's walked away from the table. Antec Rem stepped back and said, you know, we've got to go off and do these studies. And, you know, God only knows, they're critical. I mean, that's for sure. There are critical studies that have to be done, health and environmental impact. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in the future. But I think, you know, that was a huge, huge story over 2014. I don't think there was a month passed by where there wasn't something in the news about Antec Rem and what was going on there in Port Hope.
No, absolutely. And that's why I'm saying it's not a story that has gone away per se, but it is definitely a story that maybe has smaller lakes, shorter lakes. Maybe that's a good way of putting it. Because it's not going away, that's for sure. It's definitely something that is here, and because this is a project that they're saying they want to move forward with. Just how excited are they about moving forward with it, though? That's the issue, right?
Well, and how will this Ontario Municipal Board hearing turn out? I think that'll be pivotal. If they lose the OMB, then they may just pack up their tent and go home. Who knows?
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay a couple bills, just some rewinders out there, and we'll be right back with more of The Drive Time here. More of Consider This Live here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion this month to catch these great events.
On New Year's Eve, dance to the music of the Sean Savoy Band from 8 p.m. through 1 a.m. On New Year's Day, there's a levee for members starting at 10 a.m. It's open to the public at noon. Also on New Year's Day, in the upstairs hall, entertainment from 1 through 7 p.m., including Sounds of Time, 2 to 6 p.m. Open to the public, and food will be available for purchase.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air conditioning service and repair for your home or business. We make sure the air you breathe is healthy and comfortable. Pritchard's Climate Care has become one of Southern Ontario's most trusted installers of heating and air conditioning products. Sign up for our We Care maintenance plans and get your furnace service for half off our regular service price. Pritchard's Climate Care, we're not just your climate experts, we're your neighbors. Call us at 905-885-8216 or toll free at 1-877-791-6975.
Oh yeah, you feel that? Now that's happening. You want to hear some of the funkiest music ever made? Then join me every Wednesday night from 9 to midnight on Uncle Charlie's Cosmic Circus. How was that? Oh, are you still on? Shoot, that's all I've got. Well, check it out.
And welcome back to The Drive Time here, Northumberland 89.7. Yeah, we'll get to Oliver and Good Morning Starshine. Probably at the end of the show, I'll end up playing that old song for you. But welcome back to the show. Something else, you know, other news highlights today. Let's talk about Bill, the man who was feeding birds on the waterfront there, keeping them alive and supporting waterfowl, getting fined, getting tickets from the town. And let's talk about that issue.
Well, interestingly enough, that goes back to March. And he had been actually feeding them for quite some time, I believe in February and January. But it was in March that he actually received the two tickets for feeding the birds in contravention of the Cobourg bylaw. But he comes back and says, no, I'm going to continue to do this. And what he does, he counsel backs down. There's a moratorium on enforcing the bylaw. And he ends up winning a moral victory and a legal one because the town just backed
right
off.
Did he end up having to pay the fines? That's something I don't know.
I can't recall that kind of detail, but I know that was a big story for the area at the time, and he was it really divided the community and council. I think they were very much alone in this. Mm-hmm. I know that there was a lot of talk about, you know, well, this is the bylaw, we've got to follow the bylaw, but a lot of people came down in support.
Oh, I know.
Remember there was the bus tour came by. I mean,
people were buying food for him to give to the birds because they themselves weren't necessarily able to get out there and do it themselves, but they wanted to ensure that the birds were being taken care of, and so they were there. They were there to support to Bill.
And just a couple of weeks ago, there was even a suggestion he should be the Citizen of the Year for 2014.
And he could be nominated. He could be the mayor's volunteer Citizen of the Year. The mayor makes that decision. So we should put that out there to the mayor, Gil Brockenier, if you are listening, Mr. Mayor, that maybe you want to think about Bill Thompson.
Yep.
And Bill, if you're out there listening, we sure would be interested in finding out whether or not you actually had to pay those fines or whether they waived those fines or what the deal was on that. Because, again, you know, a local hero. And is he going to have to do that again this year? Now, you know, Environment Canada is saying that our winter this year is probably not going to be as bad as last year. And that was part of the reason why this was such an issue. But, you know, we don't know, right?
No, and we really haven't had a big taste. By this time last year, we had the big ice storm. The harbor was frozen over.
Mm-hmm.
So the food source for the birds was taken away, and that's why he got going on his program. So interesting, though. I mean, that was a big story throughout last winter, and it kind of mm-hmm. gets lost there.
Well, because it kept coming back, right? It was, again, because he continued to do this. This was, I don't know how many months, probably 4 months anyway. He did it right up until May, I think, and said, you know, well, we've got to do this until they can find other food sources or be taken to areas where they may have other food sources.
And you'll remember there was that petition, 6,000 signatures on a petition to support him in what he was doing. So I think that was an interesting moment though for the council because it was they had to back off pretty hard there at the end in order to save face before it really got out of hand because I think it was becoming quite divisive.
Well, it was, and it was becoming one of those issues, right? I mean, okay, so who doesn't want to help preserve waterfowl, right? I mean, really, that's what it came down to. So a guy's out there preserving waterfowl, and we're saying, I mean, because again, the bylaw isn't unreasonable. Let's be fair here, okay?
No.
The idea that we don't want people down there feeding waterfowl on a regular basis is it's a pretty good one because, of course, we want them to be able to explore their own natural, regular food sources. We don't want them to become comfortable with the fact that there's now people. Because, again, when that dries up, when it's no longer in fashion, those birds are going to still come back. So, I mean, that's part of the problem, right? And one of the reasons why the bylaw existed.
Absolutely.
Now, I got a message from my brother saying that we should probably remember the issue with the Myers Farm down in Belleville. How that farm was basically taken over in Trenton, actually, to expand the new base, the new JTF base. But I want to say, yeah, you know what? That is definitely an issue for 2014. Unfortunately, Bob, it's not a Port Hope Coburg issue. It's not an issue for now. Is that part of? I guess they're part of Quinte West, though, right?
Right now,
they're still a part of this riding.
For the moment, yeah.
So, yeah, you know what? That is an issue that...
Huge issue.
And never did really go away. I mean, it's still there. And see, the problem that most people have with the situation is this guy was basically bamboozled on the steps of the courthouse to sign a deal that he was told. And, you know, recently I was watching a program on PBS and they were talking about people who have basically pled guilty to offenses that they weren't guilty of in order to avoid a trial, which would have invariably they would have lost and they would have done considerably more time. And then, you know, if they should just plead guilty to this offense, it's a lesser offense. And don't worry, you won't do any jail time. Right. So and this is a situation where the guy was approached on the steps of the courthouse and told, look, you need to sign this deal, Mr. Myers. You know, we're going to go into the courtroom here. You're going to lose. You're fighting the federal government of Canada here. We have way more money than you do, Mr. Myers. And so you either take the deal as it goes now, or you're going to get less when we win.
And that I believe that the...
That was the argument.
But I also believe that the government had the ability to expropriate the land as it was,
yeah.
For the purposes of the military. So, I mean, it was really a losing cause. But they were trying very, very hard to, at least the Myers family and their supporters were trying mm-hmm. very hard to take the high moral ground. And at the end, it was really interesting. I remember distinctly having students out covering it when they were bringing in the bulldozers to start to level the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people, you know, staying out through the night. It was in the wintertime. It was very, very cold at the time. There was a lot of snow. And the military just backed off. The government just backed off. They didn't do anything. Things kind of cooled down. They waited a number of weeks, and then, boom, it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And there was also, too, I think the father, I forget his name, but he, I'm not sure he was as activist towards the end as he was at the beginning.
You're talking about Mr. Myers himself,
yeah.
Right? Frank Myers.
Now,
himself.
His sons, I think they were prepared to go the full 100 yards, mm-hmm. but I think towards the end he was just sort of, you know. We're not going to win this one.
Well, and for a lot of people, there was principle here. Because let's remember something about this. Because a lot of people I've spoken to in the past go, oh, come on. We know the government's just going to take the land. They needed it anyway. Blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Your bleeding heart. Anyway, the long and short of it for the Myers family, though, is this was land that was given them by the Crown directly for being United Empire loyalists. This was even before the creation of this country that the family had owned that land. And so, you know, there was a different process perhaps for a lot of people, different thought process, thinking, you know, I mean, this was back when people could own land, because individuals, you know, who were given land by the Crown at the time actually owned that piece of land. It's their land.
Five generations farmed that area. Yeah.
When you look at it from that particular perspective, you do have to wonder where the government gets off just saying, well, we're going to take that land. Too bad. You know, oh, well, we offered them fair market value. Well, how do you get fair? Because there is no fair market value, because that family actually owned that land. It was their land. Unlike most property owners in Canada, unless you're on the First Nations Reserve, because the only people who can own land in this country is the Crown and the First Nations. Unless you're given land by the Crown specifically, and you own that land. That's really the only sort of proviso around that.
But I think... as much as it was all that kind of thing as well, it was just the historic identity that went with it, and I think for a lot of people it represented sort of the darker side of what's going on down there. I mean, it's pretty exciting, you know, for the area, the expansion of the base,
mm-hmm.
all these new facilities coming down. It's going to mean a huge influx both economically and for a lot of goodness coming out of it. And to have that, it really was sort of the old community sort of bumping up against the modernist community. And there was a lot of tension there, a mm-hmm. lot of tension. And mm-hmm. I think that issue, even once this was all resolved, I don't think that's gone away. I think there's a very strong sense of old Trenton and you know, sort of the state, and this is our community, mm-hmm. and this is what we want. And then there's a lot of other people that are saying, look, here we go. There's constructions, there's jobs, there's economic redevelopment. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, this is our chance to really pick up the area. And I think you're going to see a real tension develop between Belleville and Trenton, because I think Trenton, with all of this going on, we'll see the next decade supersede Belleville in terms of its economic importance mm-hmm. to the region. So,
well, and they've been pretty stagnant for many decades now, though.
Absolutely.
And it always surprises me, because, I mean, if you go to an area in the United States where there's a military base,
mm-hmm.
the local economy in that area is booming because of the base. We don't see that so much at Canadian Air Base.
Well, but I think
we don't see that at Cold Lake. We don't see that so much at Trenton. Maybe it's because the American war machine's that much bigger. I don't know. But we definitely don't see necessarily the same type of economic impact that we would see if one were down, say, visiting Fort Bragg.
Well, early days, I'll say that, because mm-hmm. I think that...
A major air base for Canadian deployment for generations.
But not on the scale that you're going to see. I think it's, you know, these new buildings that they're putting up, the administration's going to be moving down into this region. It's going to be a major place for strategic command. I think we're going to see big changes.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're 100% correct on that one. And I think it could be nothing but good. You know, and like I said, I've spoken to Rick Norlock about this particular expansion for the last few years, you know, from when it was first being discussed to how it was going to expand, what they were bringing in, what type of aircraft they were going to be. I mean, that's one of the major reasons for the expansion. JTF-2 is going to be basically based out of there, from what I understand. There's going to be new air support that's going to be based out of there. It's going to be huge.
And they've got they just bought that new fifth Globemaster, those mm-hmm. gargantuan planes. And, and those, I've seen them take off. They are absolutely mammoth.
Well, if you've ever seen the Flying Fortresses from World War II, the B-52s, you could fit a B-52 inside one of these. One of these babies.
Just crazy.
Maybe even two, actually. It's crazy. Huge.
These are,
you know, but again, they're called Globemasters for a reason. You can be up there. That's the other thing about those particular planes. I mean, you can be aloft for quite a long time in one of those Globemasters. They use them quite essentially as forward operating bases in whatever operation they're using them.
Absolutely. I mean, they'll move vehicles, they'll move tanks. This
personnel,
is insane. It's just
hospitals,
insane.
Emergency personnel.
Just crazy.
I mean, they were similar aircraft were used by other governments down in Haiti to help mm-hmm. with the disaster there, and of course around the world in other areas. So again, you know, it's not a war machine necessarily. It's a machine that it could be used, as I said, as a forward operating base in any operation.
But I think that speaks to the issue of how significant Trenton's going to become in terms of Canada, mm-hmm. Canada and the Air Command.
Absolutely. Obviously, the municipal elections, we've alluded to the fact that there were contentions between the two wards. And the change now of councils, both in Port Hope and in Coburg, and even in Brighton, for instance, where I understand a whole whack of people were tossed. The mayor was reelected, but the people that were sort of the backbone of the of his anti-regime, those people are gone.
Yep. I think it's really going to be an interesting year coming up for them. I think there was a lot going on. You and I have talked about this many times, about the dynamic that was taking place leading up to the election.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly voters spoke, and the level of participation was a really clear indicator of just how many people were feeling upset by things. But I think before that was the provincial election. And I think that sort of set the stage when the Liberals I think surprised everybody by coming in with their majority government. I think that it'll be interesting to see how all of this is all going to play out in the upcoming months.
You make an interesting point. I thought the Liberals were going to win. I didn't figure they were going to get as big a majority as they did. I figured they would get a majority government. Because here's the thing. And again, it's too bad for the Conservatives in Ontario that it came at the wrong time. But even federally, the Conservative message, the agenda, the steam engine, if you will, of change, shot itself in the foot through time and time again, through, you know, this idea of fear and fear and fear for fear itself. And the provincial Conservatives picked up on that same thread, this whole idea of trust, accountability, and fear. And then it was all shown to be nothing but a policy balloon, if you will, a lot of hot air. And then to top it off, and you know, you had a number of candidates saying things that they probably shouldn't have said publicly that got the party in trouble, including the leader of the party. And then again, you had, like, for instance, Rob Milligan. I mean, you know, I love talking to Rob. He was a very interesting guy, and I hope he'll run again as a Conservative candidate. But to say things like, well, students in rural Ontario, we've been looking at things like a four-day school day. Whoa, what? You've been what? And you're the Conservative candidate, and the Conservative Party is a big supporter of you, and is this really the agenda of the Conservative? So again, a lot of things sort of came out that overshadow this whole idea that you can't trust the Liberals. How can you trust them with this scandal and that scandal? But again, people with short, you know, political memories don't remember the scandals of the Conservative Party of Canada, of Ontario, rather, and Mike Harris years. And so, again, you're going to have to go a long way, I think, as a political party in Ontario. You're going to have to screw up so badly for them to be able to get over some of the gaffes, major gaffes, policy gaffes of that Conservative government.
Well, but Tim Hudak shot himself in the foot so many times during that campaign.
It's true.
You might remember back.
He should have been wearing Kevlar footwear. That's
I
all
think
I'm saying.
So, yeah. but back in May, you know, he came and it was part of that Million Jobs plan.
Yeah.
And he toured Horizons Plastic. Do you remember that?
I do.
And he Horizons Plastic had received a $2 million provincial grant to help update their equipment for cheaper energy. And then there was HUDAC, you know, bitching about you know, the kinds of grants that get handed out. So on one hand, you know, it was a real a disaster of a press conference.
And I remember, if you remember seeing the because there was footage on Czech's TV where he was standing in the plant complaining, if you will, about the these grants that were given, and you see the employees, the three guys standing sort of behind him, leaning on the pallets, looking at him, going, "What?
What?
Yeah, what?
Absolutely.
We just got one of those grants, man. No. How do you think I'm able to keep my job, guy? You know." So again, you're right, and the Kevlar footwear definitely, and it's something for even re-elected Kathleen Wynne. You know, there was Robert Fisher from CBC News pointed out the fact that now that she's got a majority government, her own majority government, that she sort of, you know, tossed away the friendly face of Kathleen Wynne, and now has become a little more, you know, a majority government like, which most people think of as tyrannical. So it's a my way or the highway kind of deal. Has that happened, you think, here in Ontario? Do you think we got a my way or the highway premier now, or is it simply people don't understand it?
I think we're going to be looking at some critical budgets coming up. The provincial budget's going to be really, really important. Mm-hmm. But I think watch how the county and the local municipalities under these new regimes are going to be putting together their budgets. I think those will be major indicators of what is going to unfold, because the funding, you know, you've talked many times about the lack of federal funding coming down to the provincial level. Mm-hmm. Ontario's been saying that it's been getting a raw deal. There has been some stuff going back and forth, but is it going to be enough? And is there going to be more downloading? Is there going to be the same infrastructure spending that's been mm-hmm. going on in the past? And can we sustain two levels of municipal government in rural areas? And it'll be interesting to see where the pressure's going to come, because if they're going to make cuts and if they're going to hurt, they've got to be done early in the mandate so that she can have time to things to settle, people to make adjustments.
Wait for the bandages to come off. You
that's
know?
Right. And then, you know, later on, when she runs again for election, whether they'll be successful or not.
It's like cosmetic surgery, really, you know, because, I mean, you got to go in there. If you're getting a nose job, for instance, you got to go in there for the first couple of maybe a week afterwards. You look like you just had the crap kicked out of you. Your face is all black and blue, you know. But when they finally take those bandages off, you know, are you going to have that beautiful nose, or are you going to end up with breathing problems? And that's really what it comes down to, right? I
mean, quite artistic.
It's an interesting analogy. Okay. It may take a listener a couple of minutes to actually absorb that one. But think about that for a second, right? That's what we're talking about. We're talking about doing things early in the mandate that, you know, maybe bitter pills to swallow. But is it, you know, is it a pill that we need to take? Is it are these things that need to happen? Or are they something else? And if there's something else, then obviously by the end of the mandate, we need to remember, right?
Well, and
like selling the 407 highway, or doing things like canceling gas plants, or even funding for Mars, for that matter.
Absolutely. And they've got real fiscal issues at the provincial mm-hmm. level that they've Absolutely. Got to address. And mm-hmm. so how's that going to play at the municipal level, particularly in rural municipalities mm-hmm. where we're seeing, you know, the need for economic development and investment, the need for additional support for our hospitals and our institutions. We were talking earlier about mental health services. I mean, there needs to be investment.
Where's that money coming from? Right?
And so, you know, what it all comes from one source. So what's going to change? And, mm-hmm. and, so it'll be an interesting couple of months. I think, you know, in the first months of 2015, we'll see the councils go off. They'll come out with their strategic plans. Mm-hmm. They'll come back. They'll report. And then we'll be right into budget. I wouldn't be surprised if they aren't going to start, if they haven't already started their budget planning for the new year.
I'm pretty sure they probably are. I mean, that process probably starts, I'm going to guess anyway, in the late September, early October time frame, you know?
So it'll be interesting. So it'll all depend on when the provincial budget comes out.
And whether or not any of these governments have the stones, if you will, to make major infrastructure investments. You know, I was talking to a listener earlier. We were talking about, you know, the oil and gas industry and how Jim Flaherty basically said to corporations just before he died that, you know what, we've given you guys breaks like you wouldn't believe. You were supposed to spend the money where you said you were going to spend it. All you did was put it in your bank accounts. All you did was give it to your corporate CEOs. So maybe we need to revisit our tax regime. And that was something that, I mean, you could see the wheels spinning in the man's head. And that was as a result of his experience, I'm sure, as the finance minister for the second largest economy in the country, which is the province of Ontario, right? I mean, he realized that, yes, tax cuts were wonderful, the whole common sense revolution thing that occurred there, which a lot of people didn't agree with, including this myself, and I'm sure you as well, Rob. But he still came away from that with the realization that there are still core services that taxpayers will not let you mess with, that they expect, they are paying their tax dollars for these services, and they want them. We, as a government, need to figure out how we're going to pay for those services in not just next year, but in the long term. And I think that as a finance minister, he saw that. Do we have a finance minister currently at the federal level that sees that? I'm going to say no. In Ontario, I think Mr. Souza is actually a guy who realizes that. And he also realizes the importance of infrastructure and realizes that if we're going to get something like the Ring of Fire off the ground, we can't wait for the federal government to come along and give us an additional bit of funding like they have done in other regions of the country. We need to do it. That's a bitter pill to swallow. That's a major expense. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with more here on Northumberland 89.7. This is your Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. With me, Rob Washburn.
For over 35 years, Northumberland Security Incorporated has been providing everything necessary for physical and electronic security. From locks, alarms, safes, access control to surveillance systems, and handicap door operators. We are virtually a one-stop personal and property security center, operating from Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Visit us at 22 King Street West in Cobourg, online at northumberlandsecurity.com, or call 905-372-8951, the professional security team.
Starting your own business is an exciting time in your life, but are you aware of your legal responsibilities as a business owner? Jim McGrath specializes in business law and knows what needs to be done to protect you and your investment. Jim has been a lawyer for over 30 years and understands the law, so you don't have to. As a local resident and an entrepreneur himself, Jim McGrath is a trusted source in our community for business owners just like you. Call 905-373-1999 and let Jim McGrath give you the legal peace of mind you need.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion this month to catch these great events.
On New Year's Eve, dance to the music of the Sean Savoy Band from 8 p.m. through 1 a.m. On New Year's Day, there's a levee for members starting at 10 a.m. It's open to the public at noon. Also on New Year's Day, in the upstairs hall, entertainment from 1 through 7 p.m., including Sounds of Time, 2 to 6 p.m. Open to the public, and food will be available for purchase.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
Why don't you join me, Chris Hooker, the host of Your Hooker Time, Northumberland, a request show where whatever you're into, we'll get it on. Every Sunday afternoon, 3 to 6, be there. Let's get it on.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
Hi, this is Dave Smith, certified home inspector and the host of Reality Realty, 89.7 Northumberland's new one-hour home inspection show.
Hi, folks. This is Dale Bryant, real estate broker here in Northumberland County. Dave, Reality Realty isn't just about home inspection. It's our new show every Thursday morning, and it's about everything real estate here in our community.
So, Dale, what you're saying is it'll be 50-50 home inspection and real estate.
Is that the way it's going to be every week, Dave? Read the name of the show, Reality Realty.
That says it all. Every Thursday morning, 11 to 12, right here on 89.7 Northumberland, truly local radio.
This. Welcome back to the Drive Time, Northumberland 89.7's truly local radio, truly local political chat, if you will. I know we have another show. I think Jan Sprague does a little political stuff on her show as well. I don't know for sure, though.
But I guess the big question was, we were just talking about this. Did you get a Christmas card from Rick Norlock?
I didn't get a Christmas card.
Disappointing, eh?
I didn't get one from Rick.
Adam?
I didn't get one from Adam Moulton. No, I didn't get one from Russ Christensen.
Paul Smith?
Paul Smith. Nope, did not get a Christmas card from Paul Smith.
It must be hurt. That hurts, eh?
I did get a Christmas email, though, from Kim Rudd.
Lovely.
And I got a message from Lou Rinaldi, and I got a Christmas card, a wonderful Christmas card, actually, from the leader of the third party, Justin Trudeau. Nice family shot, if you will. You know what? I've seen a number of Christmas cards lately that they look like they're record albums. Remember the old days? Remember the Beatle albums where they're all jumping up in the air, having a good time, and as you open it up, there's other shots? I got a Christmas card from my sister-in-law that looked like a record album. I mean, the beautiful shot on the front with a little message there, and you open it up. Another great shot of just the kids, and then on the back of the album was just a shot of her and her husband. I mean, just it seriously, and you know, for those of you that know about vinyl, know what a record album is. You know, they're making a comeback, by the way. Huge sales in LPs of late. But I digress. No, I did not get a Christmas card from any of the ruling party, any of the government of the day. Nobody in opposition. Oh, sorry, not. I did get. Christmas cards from opposition and messages from the opposition. So I guess they're happy with what's going on here. I don't think the radio station got one, though. I'm not sure about that. I'd have to check. Well. But again, you know, as you say, you know, maybe it's petty. Who knows? Because again, we are predominantly, we said this during the break, we talked about the upcoming federal election. Because let's face it, there's going to be a federal election this year. Yeehaw.
Well, what do you think it's going to mean, though, for the riding, topmost?
I think, and I hope, and I know there's a magic number in this riding of 22,000 voters that Kim Rudd needs to become the Liberal MP for Northumberland Peterborough South. And I would like to see Kim Rudd in Ottawa working on behalf of Northumberland Peterborough South, or Peterborough South Northumberland, or whatever it's called now. I think Kim Rudd's got a really good chance. I mean, in the last election, the last time around, you know, the Liberals didn't do so well here. You know, they didn't, let's be frank. And they didn't do so well the time before that. You know, let's be frank. Because, again, we are predominantly progressive conservative riding. Accent on progressive, however. I think with the election of Adam Moulton as the candidate, as the conservative candidate here in the riding, I think progressives in the Progressive Conservative Party were basically finally told, finally shown the door, if you will. I don't think there's any room left in the local Conservative Party, not from the people that I saw at the nomination, and not from the conversations I've been managed to overhear at certain places around town, like the Dutch Oven, for instance. I think progressives have essentially been shown the door. I think the fact that Paul Smith didn't win the nomination, clearly a progressive conservative. I think the fact that they decided to go with a younger candidate, Adam Moulton, who, let's face it, he represents the new image of the Conservative Party of Canada. You know, your white guy, your young white guy, your young white Christian guy. And again, I'm, you know, and this isn't a slight against people who are of a particular faith, but I think that what we're seeing here is we are seeing a specific move, if you will, a shift within the party of the Conservative Party of Canada to this ultra right-wing Christian conservative idealism. You know, the tax breaks, for instance, that are being offered, you know, the Leave It to Beaver tax breaks where mom stays at home because, you know, that's what she really wants to do and look after the kids while dad goes out. He's the primary income earner. So we're going to offer the opportunity for them to do some income splitting. That's one of the deals offered. And again, that's based on a very specific ideology, I think. And that ideology doesn't include progressives at all.
Well, and the Conservatives are burning through that surplus pretty quickly as they're trying to do all these giveaways before they come to the election. A couple of things I think are going to be critical.
Well, hold on. One thing, though, about the surplus, because let's face it, it may be a budgetary surplus because they haven't been spending money. We know that from the amount of money that's been given back. But you know as well as I do, Rob, that they've increased the national debt by 49%. 49%. I don't know if that's good fiscal management or not. But, again, I don't know how they can say they're good economic fiscal managers by balancing a budget when they've increased the national debt by 49%. But to your point, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think there's a couple of things playing locally. First of all, is when is that election going to take place? We know that the October date is fixed, but it could be called sooner as a strategic move. And you were talking earlier about, you know, nominations are going on, and if they hit a certain threshold, the Conservatives might just drop the writ just to get a jump on the other two parties. So we could be going to an election this spring, possibly.
Absolutely.
So who knows? That could play a big part of it. The second thing is it going to become a referendum on Stephen Harper? And if it plays out in that way, will the voting be done locally to for a particularly a national end, or are we going to be voting locally about local candidates? And that would make, again, a different dynamic in terms of who would be successful and who would not. So I think those are two factors that we've got to be really careful of. I also think that come Monday, we're going to see the heat's going to get turned up on this campaigning. We've already seen all three party leaders are basically in election mode, have been now for 4, 5, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're just going to see it get more and more intense. I think it's going to be an incredibly dirty campaign. I think there's going to be, look out for lots of negative advertising.
Well, we're already seeing the negative advertising. We're already seeing the government being criticized for hiring companies like News Limited, for instance,
yep,
to act as their PR news wing, selling stories as news. And unfortunately, I was cruising a website recently, a local website, and I'm not going to mention the website, but what I saw there was breaking news, and I looked at the breaking news, and it was clearly a piece that had been created and drafted by the government of the day to make them look particularly good on a specific issue. This was a nutrition issue, the Nutrition North issue, quite frankly, yep, which, let's face it, they have crapped the bed large on that particular portfolio. So, again, the tricks are already starting. We're already seeing the dirty tricks. And as you say, the writ could be dropped earlier. One of the things I said while we were talking during the break was right now the Conservatives have already nominated 60% of the candidates. There are 338 ridings in this country in the next federal election. 338. So they've already managed to find candidates for 60% of those ridings. The Liberals, excuse me, the Liberals are at about 40-43%, and the NDP have only got about 18-19%. This is as a news story I read in two sources, actually. One was the source from Quebec, which name completely escapes me, and of course the other was CBC, because I'm a regular CBC viewer, listener. And they were saying, once the federal Conservatives get to about 75% in the nominations, and they're only 15% away, they could drop the writ. At that point, they could drop the writ. They've got more than two-thirds of their candidates chosen for the 338 seats. A number of them are incumbents, so they're not really going to have to worry about that. They're really only focusing on other ridings, like this riding, where they would have had an incumbent, but now they have a new candidate. And again, so what we're and of course the style of candidate that they're choosing as well, right? So once they get there, that is my belief. So that could they be there as early as June? Yeah. Could they be there in May? Yeah. Could we see an election as a result of that? Definitely.
The other thing that's going to be a factor in this is going to be the realigned riding.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now, how's this going to affect our demographic? How is this going to affect the voting pattern? I mean, we're going to be losing the Quinte West component. We're going to be gathering the South Monahan,
mm-hmm,
South Peterborough,
Clarington,
all that area. That's a very different area. And, I haven't seen poll results. I maybe, somebody on the inside of one of these political parties might be able to track this better than we can publicly. But,
mm-hmm,
how are these going to affect votes? And I think that's still to be played out. I don't think we can sort of trust past records and sort of the voting patterns of the past to predict what's going to happen. I think it's really up in the air. And,
mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm, Kim's well known in this area, in Northumberland. But, I think there's a lot of spade work she's probably doing as we speak to the north and to the west. So I think that's going to have an impact. And also, too, I think, Moulton is really got his work cut out for him. He's a young guy. He's been able to get a head start through his nomination. But it's a much, much different game when you got to get out there and start mixing it up,
mm-hmm,
with voters in general.
Well, and that's the thing, because he's going to obviously be running on the record of the government of the day. He's obviously going to be running on this idea of strong fiscal, reliable management, and which I would quite frankly say is not the case. So as long as people are arming themselves with the information they need, with the questions, and are able to develop the questions they need at the door to ask these candidates, I think we're probably going to see an interesting race here in this riding based on that alone. Now, the idea of strategic voting, well, here's the thing. In the last many federal elections, we've allowed the government of the day to create an image of the opposition, created an image of them as traitors when the government was found in contempt of Parliament for refusing to provide information on Afghan detainees being tortured. Rather than worry about the possibility of being a coalition government, they painted a coalition government as a traitorous government that would have been in violation of what the voters' wishes were. And they urged the Governor General at the time to prorogue Parliament rather than have an election forced, which is exactly what should have happened. There should have been an election. The Prime Minister did not serve at the pleasure of the House of the day at that time. As a matter of fact, the majority of the House was the opposition. They just weren't able to work together. And once they started talking about working together, which is something I think they're going to have to talk about again in this upcoming election cycle, it was painted as traitorous treachery by the government of the day, who, quite frankly, as I said, at the same time was being found in contempt of Parliament while they were trying to rejig the rules. So, and also at the same time, I mean, we've got a government now that's been found in contempt of Parliament. They have been found guilty, or associates of their party have been found guilty in no less than 6 vote-rigging style election fraud, money laundering schemes that you can think. I don't remember any. I mean, this is a government that said the Liberal Party of Canada has a sense of entitlement and we need to get rid of them. They're wasting, look at all the millions of dollars they wasted on the sponsorship program. This is a government that spends $100 million a year for the last 5 years so they can advertise what they're doing, the economic action plan. And let's be frank, is that money well spent? Was the idea that the Liberals were going to spend money to preserve the Confederation, was that money well spent? I think so. These guys, on the other hand, have allowed, I mean, we've got a prime minister who had a $2 million debt for his own leadership, who has still refused to tell the people of this country who paid that bill. Where did he get the money to pay off that $2 million? He's not an independently wealthy man. Where did he get that money from? He still refuses to tell us where he gets that money from. We've got members of parliament that have been convicted of election fraud. We've got questionable actions by Julian Fantino, the Minister of Veterans Affairs right now. His own riding association or people within his own riding are investigating the fundraising that was done to get him a win in a by-election, where they raised $700,000 more than they needed to, and that money secretly went into another bank account and went out to the other riding associations across the province. These are things that are, I'm not making this stuff up, listeners. These are things that we should all be aware of. Because is this a referendum against Stephen Harper? I would say no. It's a referendum against the Conservative Party of Canada agenda, which currently is being headed by Stephen Harper.
So that's got to play out locally.
And
that,
it will.
Well, and that, I think that'll be really the litmus test. If what you're saying is true, then it will definitely, when it comes to marking the ballot, it won't matter whether it's Kim Rudd or Adam mm-hmm. Mulnay. It'll be, you know, conservative or it'll be liberal. And that'll play out. And then the question becomes, is Trudeau going to be a strong enough candidate? Mm-hmm. And Mulclair, is he going to be strong enough to come up against this? Or is it just going to be this incredible, incredible backlash?
Again, it's all about who creates the narrative. Who's telling the story? Is it going to be the government of the day creating and spreading the image that they want to spread, or is it going to be the opposition creating and spreading their own image that they want to spread?
Well, but I think local candidates have lots of work to mm-hmm. do as
they
well.
They definitely do.
You know, I don't think it can all be on the back of the party leaders. I think we'll have to see.
Well, and that's the thing, right? And that's the difference between, because again, the Conservatives love to talk about strong, stable leadership, and they're talking about Stephen Harper, he's the guy. That's why people can always go, I don't like the Harper government. They even call it the Harper government. It's, you know, it's a myth. It's not the Harper government. It's the Conservative Party of Canada government, and that's what we need to realize. And Canadians need to wake up to the reality that whether it's Tom Mulcair and his team or Justin Trudeau and his team, we are electing a team. You know, I mean, I've talked to a lot of Toronto Maple Leaf fans who have been fans, even though they haven't won the Cup since the year my wife was born. They're still fans. Why? Because of the team. It's not about the leader of that team, okay? It's about the team, and that's what people need to vote for. They need to look at the team. They need to look at what, and this is why. You know, membership in political parties is going up through the roof these days. Seriously, people are actually getting active. They're joining political parties. You know, and in this riding, you've got another candidate, the NDP candidate, Russ Christensen, who's run in a number of elections. He's very well known within the riding. Kim Rudd, another individual. I mean, Russ has done some great work in the riding. So he's known for that. Kim Rudd, done some great work in the riding. She's known for that. So both of them can run on their personal records as well as the record, prospective records of their political parties. And then you got Adam Moulton, who really, frankly, locally, has no record. All right. I mean, he may have been part of this team-sponsored event or whatever. I don't know. Okay. But what I do know is he doesn't have the same record as the other two candidates does. What he does have is an anchor around his neck called the Conservative Party of Canada, which, quite frankly, has made cuts. Even Jim Flaherty said this. You can't continue to make these tax cuts when you can't afford the programs that Canadians want. And that's why he said to Amanda Lang on one of his last interviews, it's time for companies to put up or shut up.
Well, I think we need to hear from Adam Moulton. I think this guy hasn't really stood up too much and spoken publicly. So I think that's something we can look forward to in 2015.
Well, it would be interesting to get him on the show. Listeners, I want to thank you for tuning in to Consider This Live, our regular segment here on Wednesdays. It's Wednesday, December 31st. It's New Year's Eve. Rob, you doing anything?
Yep. Nope.
Sitting in front of the TV watching This Hour is 22 Minutes like me, probably, or Air Farce. Air Farce, by the way, is going to be in Peterborough, I believe. They're doing their live show from Peterborough. So, again, Happy New Year to everybody. I will be back tomorrow, hopefully, unless I'm at the Legion enjoying the levee, which I might be. I might be. But tomorrow is New Year's Day, so, you know, there's a possibility I will be here because this is my life. Anyway, coming up is Cedar Rail. I want to thank you for tuning in. Rob, always a great pleasure to have you here. Listeners, you can check out these. By the way, these discussions are up on Consider This as well, Rob's website. Check that out. Check out more of Northumberland 89.7. Here is Cedar Rail.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station.